Dette er lyden av starten på en brand. Lett å høre om man hjemme, ikke sant? Men hvem hører røykvarsleren når ingen hjemme? Med boligalarm fra Sektoralarm får du røykvarslere som tilkoblet døgnbemannet alarmstasjon. Alarmoperatører vil reagere uansett om det noen hjemme eller ikke. Og med Sektoralarm-appen har du full kontroll uansett hvor du Sektoralarm, alltid til stede.
Embracing winter time and embracing nature as best as possible to me is the best way to optimize your health.
Velkommen til Biohacking Girls podcast, der vitenskap møter livsstil, og der vi tar kontroll over vår egen helse.
Vi dykker ned i teknologi, ernæring, trening og mentale hacks for å styrke kropp og sinn. Det handler om å bruke naturens prinsipper for å finne balanse, energi og glede.
Vi tester, utforsker og lever som vi lærer, alt for å inspirere deg til å finne din vei til et balansert og godt liv.
For det alle kan få dette til, og sammen kan vi gjøre kunnskap til praksis og skape varig forandring. Du klar for å ta steget inn i fremtiden? La oss hacke livet sammen. Ja, det jo vinter enda, og det har vært mye snø i Oslo i det siste, og noen elsker det, og andre hater det. Enten du en person som lider av vinterdepresjon, eller ikke, så kan de fleste av oss forbedre noen av valgene vi gjør gjennom livene våre for å takle denne vinteren litt bedre.
Ja, for vinteren det jo en tid med veldig redusert solenergi, og særlig her i Norge. Vi har faktisk ikke UVB fra oktober og helt til slutten av mars, og UVA det en hel måned i overgangen desember-januar, hvor vi ikke har noe av. Og tenk på alle de som bor helt nord i Norge, hvor det mørketid. Og som et resultat av dette så jo biologien vår sulten på andre måter å få energi på. Men når vi så frakoblet årstidene som vi nå, så det vanskelig å bygge bro over dette store gapet.
Ja, naturen jo syklisk, altså den har rytmer, og de rytmene de varierer. Og hvis vi ønsker å funke bra, så må vi faktisk bry oss litt om disse syklusene, og det noe jeg har måttet lære meg. Når jeg flyttet til Oslo, for i Stavanger hadde vi ikke så mye snø, for eksempel. Så jeg måtte lære meg å bruke vinteren. For disse variasjonene, det en av de mest undervurderte aspektene vi har med god helse. Og det faktisk noe veldig få tenker på, eller bevisst over.
Ja, for over 100 år siden var sesongvariasjoner en helt naturlig del av livet og vanene våre. Men i dag, der alt så behagelig og så lett, vi har varme, vi har aircondition, vi har egentlig samme temperatur året rundt, og mange går jo inn i en varm bil, den blir forhåndsoppvarmet, og vi har tilgang til mat fra hele verden på et øyeblikk. Så dette har jo disse sesongvariasjonene og tradisjonene våre, de var vanlig sunnhet før, men nå må vi faktisk jobbe litt med å leve litt mer etter disse forskjellige variasjonene.
Ja, og vi som bor i Norge, vi vet at været det skifter mye hele året. Jeg har vokst opp i Stavanger, og vi kunne ha nesten 3-4 årstider på en dag, av og til med hagl, og plutselig så kunne det virke som det kom snø og regn, og så var det sol. Så vi ønsker jo å få det beste livet, også på vinteren. Og siden dette faktisk så mange måneder som vi må leve under kulde, så skal vi ikke bare overleve, men vi skal ha det bra.
Og jeg må si at jeg har vært en person som aldri har likt vinter, vært litt sånn klagete og bare hatet. Men de siste årene så har jeg virkelig prøvd å omfavne vinteren. Og det begynte med oss to, som mange ting begynte med meg, Monica, og det begynte med at vi begynte med den isbadingen. Fy søren som det hjalp, og hvor jeg begynte å skjønne det med at ja, det mye vi kan gjøre om vinteren også, som litt ubehagelig, men fy søren for en god følelse det gir, og det å tåle den kullen, og jeg sitter med vinduet åpent på bilen midt på vinteren nå, og det går helt fint, så nå jeg jobber skikkelig med saken, og du har flyttet til Spania.
Ja, det har jeg, men jeg har også blitt litt mer glad I vinteren, I den forstand at jeg ikke trenger å bekymre meg sånn for å bli kald. Jeg klarer å være med nok for å bruke kroppen mer og bevege meg mer, og så bare det at det, å måke, det blir en måkefest I stedet for at det blir noe så kjedelig, det blir en økt ut, og så gir meg en liten sånn følelse av glede. Det jo et lite dopaminkick å få den kulden, og selv I Spania så gjør jeg ting for å kjøle meg ned. Det jo ikke akkurat varmt I havet, men jeg går gjerne ned og bader, og sitter på kveldene til solen går ned, og ikke kjempevarm, for det jo ikke sommer, det vinter her også. Men I alle fall så har vi med oss I dag en fyr som vi beundrer veldig, og han sitter gjerne inne I 10 pluss grader inne I huset sitt I Wyoming der han bor. Så god har han blitt på å tåle vinteren og kulden. Vi møtte han I London på en biohacking-kongress.
Og han heter Tristan Scott, han som du sa fra Wyoming, og han Head of Operations and Marketing at Daylight Computer, og dette skal vi komme tilbake til også. Tristan Scott, han forsker og formidler innen feltene kvantebiologi og døgnbiologi, og han opptatt av hvordan naturlovene styrer oss menneskers både helse og prestasjoner.
Ja, og det arbeidet han gjør, det bygger bro mellom eldgamle biologiske rytmer, døgnrytmer og moderne livsstiler. Og det gir oss masse innsikt I hvordan vi selv kan få det bedre helsemessig. Rett og slett for å tilpasse oss naturens sykluser. Så dette handler jo da om vinteren, for nå vi I vinteren. Hvordan kan vi mennesker og oss I Norge, og dere som lytter til podcasten, tilpasse oss disse syklusene som vi har rundt oss akkurat nå? Hvordan kan vi få det bedre? Velkommen til Biohacking Girls podcast. Biohacking Girls,
Hi Tristan and welcome to our podcast. It's so great to speak to you finally and it was a pleasure to meet you in person in London.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, I know we've been discussing this for a bit and I'm glad we can make it happen. So it's great to meet you both in person and now follow back up. It's already been well, 5-6 months. It's crazy. Yeah. Time is flying.
It's so nice to see you. Yes.
But let's start a little bit about your background, because I don't know if that many people in Norway know about you and what brought you to study circadian biology and the quantum physics. What brought you all the way here?
Yeah. I would say my health journey started in 2018, really. I suffered one too many concussions in my last year at university. I played soccer, football, and I kind of was forced to go down this self-healing rabbit hole. I had post-concussive syndrome for over a year, like daily headaches, you know, irritability to noise, light, sound, and really was a high-functioning engineering student and soccer player. And then that all kind of went away very quickly from the concussion. So I, you know, fortunately, looking back at it, although it was a challenging time period, made me realize that, you know, the healthcare system, kind of the centralized medicine was not the answer, because I didn't get any help from neurologists or anyone, and that there was this whole space available to learn about health. And it's just on the internet for free. So I began, you know, consuming podcasts and reading books and really started learning a ton and just implementing these tactics and lifestyle changes into my day-to-day. And I began to feel better. And eventually I got to a place where I was able to, you know, exercise regularly again. And I had all this momentum. I graduated university and, you know, as a young man, I was like, well, it's probably pretty important to be passionate and knowledgeable about your health going forward. So I just continued to learn. And, you know, I got really into the food system, regenerative agriculture and diet at first, like most people do. Nature, getting outdoors was something I always loved to do. I grew up doing, you know, hiking and skiing and being outside. I kind of lost touch with that when I was in university and high school because, you know, I did it with my family and then you stop hanging out with your parents so much when we become a teenager. But then I reconnected with that lifestyle and, you know, felt a lot of fulfillment because I stopped, you know, going out to the bars and drinking after my concussions. And yeah, I just continued to learn and I continued to spend more time outside. And then the whole, you know, circadian rhythm and EMFs and light, I practiced these things very early on. Like I had blue blockers like in 2018, although they're probably not the highest quality pair. I was doing grounding and, you know, watching morning sunrise, but I didn't take a super deep dive. until after I kind of went into the food system side of things first. But I realized after I wrapped that up that I had a background in electrical engineering. That's what I studied at university. And I realized there's this big gap in educating on kind of the electromagnetic aspects of our biology, and is an area that I was really passionate about because it was rooted in, you know, nature and getting outside. And I had over the past three to four years just spent more and more time outside, and that correlated directly with how I felt. And at that point, you know, we're talking like 2 or 3 years ago, I felt better than I had pre-brain injury. And that correlated directly with just being more and more connected to my environment. And I'm also very passionate about decentralization and Bitcoin, and kind of just how that all comes together in sovereign living. So to me, it was the perfect angle. And I decided to focus on that in the past 3 years, just study deeply on the electromagnetic aspects, the light, the EMFs, the grounding. And yeah, that led me eventually to the Daylight Computer. So it's been an amazing past 6-7 years now almost. And I'm very thankful for everyone I've connected with along the way.
Wonderful to hear. But what happened health-wise? What kind of changes did you notice in the beginning when you did all these changes?
Yeah, so I had all these symptoms, right? I had daily headaches, like every day you wake up with a headache, that, and terrible energy, like chronic fatigue. I had to sleep 12 hours to just like get through the day. And it very, you know, sensitive to noise, light, sound. So when I started implementing these changes, and it started with some supplements at first, just to like relax my system. Like I took CBD and fish oil and lion's mane, that helped a ton in the beginning for my brain. But then just really focusing on routine and stress and eating clean instead of processed foods. And it just started to remove a lot of the brain fog I had and reinvigorate the energy in my system. So I was able to do more. And anything or anyone who has ever dealt with like a brain injury or a concussion, you basically have this stimulation threshold. And when you exceed that, whether that's from exercise, from screen time, or just doing too much, being stressed out, you just feel wiped out and really fatigued. So I was able to increase my threshold, and then just like working out at the gym, progressive overload and building that back up over, you know, a period of months and months and eventually years. So I pretty much overhauled my entire lifestyle habits.
But could you measure some of these changes, like blood levels, or did you do any work there?
Eventually, after a couple of years, but again, the thing with brain injuries is they're an invisible injury. So there's not much to really measure. It's more so on the, you know, symptomatic level. But, you know, by the time I got really into, you know, the biohacking and, you know, taking regular blood tests, like all my blood markers were actually great. You know, blood glucose and testosterone and all these things. Like vitamin D was certainly an area that I could have improved upon, and I did. I spent a lot more time outside, but a lot of the big gains I had in the beginning were really just from, you know, how I felt on a day-to-day cognitive level. And, you know, I was wearing an Oura ring like religiously and off tracking and optimizing my sleep. And yeah, I think my HRV definitely got better over time, but it was pretty decent to start with. Probably just from being an athlete for so long.
Lucky you that you started so young doing all these things.
Yeah. That's a great point. And that's the one thing I'm so fortunate about is, yeah, I was like 22 years old and I wasn't going to accept that was like a new normal for me, but I quickly realized, wow, well, I'm so grateful this happened because I'm, you know, in my 20s and, you know, now I have all this knowledge and I can, you know, have that for the rest of my life and have these, you know, lifestyle foundations built for the rest of my life, plus pass that on to, you know, people I care about and my own family in the future.
Great. Should we talk a little bit about winter?
Oh,
we're
yes.
In the middle of the winter season here now. And, it's kind of a crucial time for all of us to align with the cold and the changes. Do you have any good suggestions on how to live better during these months?
Yes, absolutely. And this is especially in Norway, you know, it's very challenging because you guys have a far more drastic, you know, change in the environment in terms of the light that's available. But I think people do need to In America, it's almost like non-existent that people, you know, really embrace seasonality. And I think that's one of the most important aspects of health is embracing your local environment to the highest level. And that includes the seasons. And that includes, you know, the cyclicality that comes with that. And in the winter time, you look at a time period where there's less solar energy available. So this is a big portion of the energy we get on a daily basis, right? Even though the average person spends most of their time indoors, it's still a massive amount of energy that's coming from the sun. And that's, you know, drastically reduced, especially, you know, in Norway at these very high latitudes. So what also changes is, you know, the local food that's available to you in the winter time versus the summertime. You know, there's not, once you get into, you know, now January, February, there's not much able to be grown locally. And that's for good reason. And the temperature is also, you know, the main thing that everyone notices. And it's a big swing from summer to winter time. So what I think and what I practice, I live in Wyoming where we're not as far north. We still get, you know, the sun comes up at 8 and sets at 4. It's not that bad, but it gets cold. I was driving this morning and it was like minus 15 C and it hasn't even been that cold this year. And what I do is I just try and embrace all of these input signals from the local environment as best as possible. So that means trying to eat, you know, hyper locally in the wintertime. So there's less produce, less carbohydrates, especially like fruit and things like that are very seasonal. I try to keep that as a seasonal piece of my diet. And I'm eating more of a carnivore-ish diet in the wintertime, higher fat content, because that's what would be available if you lived out here in the wild and you were just fending for yourself. And that, you know, kind of low carb, high fat, more ratio tends to make me feel a lot better. And it makes sense because it's a way for your body, your mitochondria to become more efficient when there's less energy available from the sun. And of course, I'm still trying to spend as much time outside as possible. That's like blanket statement for any time of year. But I think even especially in the wintertime, it's a higher emphasis because it's more challenging for people to spend hours outside. And even if you have to wear like a bunch of layers, you're still getting benefit from being outside. Like infrared light from the sun is, you know, passing through all the layers of your clothing. And you have maybe 6, 7, 8 hours of sun during the winter. So that matters even more so. And the temperature aspect, embracing that. So in the winter time, I keep my house around like 10 to 11 C, whereas in the summer, it's almost 20 C in my house. And that's a far greater, that's a big swing, like 10 degrees C, whereas most people have their temperature in their house the same all year round, even though the outdoors temperature is fluctuating like 20, 30 C, depending on the time of year. And that's something that people really underestimate their ability to adapt to different temperatures. And the more time you spend outside, of course, the better you're going to be able to do that.
Okay, back to the 10 C inside. So how do you do that? And you don't feel cold?
No. I mean, right now I'm standing in front of a window, the sun's shining through. I have a t-shirt and then a flannel on. I mean, it's not that bad. And it's something that I've noticed. Well, last year was the first year I tried this and I slowly went down. You know, I started at like, you know, 15, 17 C and then like I'll go down a degree or half a degree like every few days. And then as it got colder outside, it just becomes easier. Your body adapts and you think about just people who lived predominantly outside, before modern temperature controls, this would naturally happen as the seasons go on. So yeah, I mean, you don't want to be uncomfortable to where it's stressing you out, but you want to like slowly decrease it. So where you're getting this kind of adaptation effect, but you're still, you know, not like shivering in your house. That's kind of the point. And of course, I think this is better than like some people, you know, cold plunging and all these things are amazing. I do those as well. But that can be really like a lot for some people to handle, to just go jump in a frozen lake in the wintertime. That's a big stress on the body. Whereas if you just go for like walks outside and you slowly decrease the temperature in your house, I think maybe that's more reasonable for people. But embracing cold in any capacity in the winter, I think, is important.
Can you explain to us the mitochondrial uncoupling, how our energy produces heat and how our body produces energy? Can you kind of explain that so we understand?
Yeah. So that's the reason for this cold thermogenesis, this adaptation, is that our mitochondria, you know, the, in my opinion, the most important aspect of our biology, and they're also like the electromagnetic sensors of our biology. They do so much, but something they do that maybe people don't really realize is they produce heat, really as a byproduct of oxidative phosphorylation and ATP production. And how coupled your mitochondria are is a reference to the system of the ATP output. So when you have a very tightly coupled mitochondria, you're producing ATP at very high efficiency, and you're not producing a lot of heat as like the quote unquote byproduct. But that byproduct actually has a use case. And when you uncouple your mitochondria, there's all these uncoupling proteins. There's, you know, six of them. There's a whole, you know, realm of research that's going on, and we don't even know the extent of all of them. But uncoupling protein one, which is predominantly found in your adipose tissue and your fat, is what is going to be producing a lot of heat when it uncouples ATP production from the electron transport chain. And that's powerful, right? And you hear that, like, this cold immersion converts your white adipose tissue to brown adipose tissue, and brown fat is good because it's more metabolically active. That's true because it has more mitochondria. It is brown quite literally because it has more mitochondria density, and it looks brown under a microscope because the mitochondria are kind of like reddish in color. So what that's going to allow is when you get cold, you're going to uncouple your mitochondria. So you're going to produce more heat per mitochondria, and you're also going to stimulate mitochondrial biogenesis, which is just the production of more. So you're going to be able to produce more heat and also kind of just increase the capacity of the total mitochondria in your body. So you're going to be able to regulate your body temperature more. You're going to be able to burn fat for fuel better. And you're going to be able to be primed to thrive in the wintertime. And there's a whole lot of other, you know, potential benefits, such as, you know, reducing oxidative stress and regulating autophagy as well, that come along with uncoupling. And it's a really fascinating area of research. And even the longevity folks like David Sinclair and Stephen Gundry have like pointed to uncoupling at a high level, not just from like cold and fat cell activation, is really a key to longevity because it helps offload some oxidative stress and kind of be this, you know, kind of mechanism for your body to maintain homeostasis in the mitochondria, which, you know, are vitally important. And the way I see embracing winter and seasonality is like, okay, what induces mitochondrial uncoupling? Well, the number one is cold, but also like higher fat diets, like fat will induce uncoupling versus carbohydrates will kind of do the opposite effect. Melatonin has a greater effect on uncoupling, whereas vitamin D synthesis actually has the opposite effect. So you go down this list, and it actually makes sense that everything that would be present in wintertime in a higher degree is aligned with activating mitochondrial uncoupling to a higher degree. So that's kind of what I've maintained is like the science behind the logical, you know, thought process in thriving in wintertime.
I 2024 kom det nye kostholdsråd. Det anbefales å spise mellom 500 og 800 gram frukt og grønt om dagen, som tilsvarer omtrent 8 porsjoner. Da passer det bra at Extra, som eneste dagligvarekjede I Norge, alltid tilbyr 8 frukt og grønnsaker på tilbud. Vi kaller det alltid 8. Så fyll opp handlekurven med alt fra jordbær til poteter og gjør det både sunt og billig. Hos Extra.
Når kveldsroen senker seg, og du endelig kan slappe av, det godt å vite at noen passer på. Med Sektoralarm får du en skreddersydd alarm installert av FG-godkjente montører. Hjemmet ditt beskyttet døgnet rundt, og koblet til vår alarmstasjon, som reagerer umiddelbart hvis noe skjer. så kan du sove godt, reise bort eller bare nyte roen med en stor bekymring mindre. Les mer om et trygt smarthjem på sektoralarm.no. Sektoralarm. Alltid til stede.
So the start hack is actually just to turn down the heaters in the house and just go lower and lower and try to work that way and even do the cold showers or cold exposures. But how about people who doesn't feel well with too much fat or too much proteins? If we talk about food, what could we do then?
Yeah, there's definitely a threshold, and I've noticed that it's easy to overdo it on fat. So your body, especially like cooked fat, your body can sometimes just like not handle a ton of that. So I think it's finding a happy balance, but think of the things that really would be available in winter time. And, you know, for produce or, you know, non-meat or non-animal food perspectives, they are, you know, things like potatoes and onions or winter greens. Like they actually have a chance to grow in the winter time. Whereas if you're eating a banana or like a tropical fruit, I mean, there's no bananas that ever grow in Norway or Wyoming. So I don't ever eat those. But especially in the winter time, you're giving your body a very confusing signal that it's in this place of, you know, high ultraviolet light environment and sun and kind of this summer metabolism where you want to be signaling the opposite. You want to be upregulating complex two in your electron transport chain, which is where a higher ratio of the, you know, fatty acids go, whereas carbs go into complex one. So it's literally creating a shift in how your mitochondria are metabolizing energy. And that happens for good reason. And I would say if you can handle like in a crazy abundance, just think of like what might be available, like carrots and tubers and winter greens are a better option for sure.
But how about, you know, eating in the sunlight? So it will be a shorter eating window in Norway. But we also have up north where they have the darkness the whole day and night for a couple of months. How do they do it when it comes to eating?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I definitely am an advocate for mostly eating when the sun is up, especially in the morning time, like getting outside first thing. That's going to help with fatty acid oxidation, actually. So if you don't tolerate fats super well in the morning, I highly recommend trying to spend some time in the sun or eat outside, which it can be hard when it's really cold out, of course, but going for a walk first or right after, that's going to help with fatty acid oxidation in the body. And yeah, when you have this really, really narrow light window, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that you absolutely should only eat when the sun is up, but you should consider narrowing that window and think about, you know, sleep as well. Like activity level, all of these things are cyclical. And the further north you are, the further the extreme. You know, in the summertime, I can easily sleep 7 hours, like maybe even 6.5 hours. But in the wintertime, I'm consistently like 8, 8.5, 9 hours, because it's just a period of time where melatonin is the dominant force. Vitamin D synthesis is unavailable. So embracing that to the best you can, given the constraints of the modern, you know, world we live in, is my recommendation. And, you know, just think about the times where, you know, this is a more kind of catabolic and restorative and repair centric time, as opposed to super anabolic and, you know, high metabolism, high output. But, you know, that's why also like winter activities and sports are great as well, because it helps get you outside and then you're warmer when you're, you know, a little active. So that's how I love spending the winter time skiing and hiking still when I can.
I think it's great with this perspective, just to bring the lunch or the coffee outside and combine those things. But although I'm Norwegian, I just came back from a snowy winter in Oslo to 20 degrees in Spain. And I am outside here all the time. And the first night I sleep like a princess. I sleep so well and wake up so full of strength again. And it really affects me even in the winter, because I'm Norwegian. It's winter still, but it's another winter here. It's just 4 hours away. But still, these changes are so big. And I start eating green bananas this morning for breakfast, because this is local, you know? But it takes some time if you travel How long time does it take to adjust to like a new?
That's a tough question. And I would say it's contingent on many things, but including how far you travel and how connected you were to the environment that you left. And I'll give an example. Last winter was the first winter where I went like hardcore, like house was 10C, cold plunging every day, carnivore. And then in March, I was in this state where I could walk around my house or outside. It's zero degrees outside, 10C in my house. I'm wearing a t-shirt, feel amazing. And then I went to El Salvador in March and it was 35C and 100% humidity. The UV is like 12 to 14. And I'm not going to lie, I felt horrible. Like I felt really bad. I also got a little food poisoning. So like in general, it takes a long time for your body to like fully adapt. But that's an extreme change. That's like 45th latitude to like 13th latitude. So that's a drastic change. Whereas if you're just going, from Europe, everything's a lot closer. And I think you can adapt a lot quicker because you're not going such an extreme. And it could be helpful for you, especially if you're sick or not doing well and, want to get that sunshine energy and you have the means to travel in the wintertime. I think getting like a week or two in Spain or Portugal can be a monumental way, or do it, right before the wintertime hits to front load all of that. But you are running this, adaptation cycle. So you are kind of confusing your body to some degree, but that may be worth it to help get you through the entire, winter, because again, we don't live outside anymore. So there's some disconnection that we quite literally just can't overcome. And that's where, doing these modern hacks of traveling or maybe a light therapy device is going to be necessary.
That's good to hear, because so many Norwegians do exactly that. They get some flight tickets and go away for just a week just to load the battery a little bit and then go back again. So with these changes of 4 hours, it's probably not such a long time. But still, just a few weeks ago, we could see the Northern Light close to Oslo. Beautiful. Have you ever seen it? And do you know anything about the effect that this light has on our health?
Yeah, I have seen it briefly in Finland a couple years ago. I don't know about the effect that the light has on your health, but I know it's a very good indication of the electromagnetic environment and the solar storms that are coming and interacting with the charged particles in the atmosphere. And what's really interesting is, we're talking about seasonality and locality, but one of the reasons why I say traveling, you want to be a little careful, especially if you're going halfway across the world or for me, to America, to Central America, is the electromagnetic environment there is drastically different. So we have a natural electromagnetic field of the Earth, and we have a magnetic field due to this, molten iron core of moving charges in the Earth's core. And that's actually what's protecting us from these harmful ionizing particles coming from the sun and doesn't make it to the surface. And that's a lot of what you see when, the Northern Lights are lighting up the sky. But in places like Norway or further north, magnetism is stronger because the Earth is kind of like this natural bar magnet. And at the poles, you're getting a stronger magnetic field naturally from the Earth. And it also comes out of the Earth at a different angle as opposed to if you were at the equator. So this is something that, again, it comes down to this local environment. So if you just, went to Australia or something for your summer holiday, you're going to be in a completely different environment. It's going to take your body some time to adapt. But that's what's cool. That's where I'm like scratching the surface. And not a lot of people understand these natural EMFs we're exposed to and how much they dictate our biology. But there's plenty of studies showing the effects of circadian rhythm, and a lot of the energy production is bound to electric and magnetic fields that naturally exist and communicate via, in the cells.
That's what I have heard also about the circadian rhythm. Biohacking girls, changing the game. Seasoaps en norsk gjeng med grønne vaskemidler og såper som laget for å ta vare både på deg og miljøet. Her finner du alt fra produkter til hus, hytter og tøy, til hud, hår og til og med til hunder.
Det hele startet med Caroline, som drømte om å lave såper som var minst like gode som de I butikkhyllene, bare uten unødvendige kjemikalier eller tilsetningsstoffer.
Resultatet? En serie produkter som supereffektive, miljøvennlige og dufter av natur. Duftene kommer fra usprøytet mark og dyrket I Europa, og produktene designet for å se så fine ut at de kan stå fremme både på kjøkkenbenken og på badet ditt.
Kan såpe være trygt, grønt og til og med litt skjønt? Svaret ja. Du finner Seasoaps på seasoaps.com. Bli kjent med dem I dag og gi hjemmet ditt en naturlig oppfriskning. Bruk rabattkoden BIOHACKING20 for 20% rabatt. Biohacking girls,
changing the game. Then I want to talk about the grounding. How do we do that in the wintertime? And probably we in Norway need more grounding since it's more powerful here.
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's actually the opposite, because so there's the electric field component and then there's the magnetic field component. And magnetism is stronger in Norway at the poles, but the electric field really is a byproduct of lightning strikes and thunderstorm activity, which is weaker at the poles and higher concentration in the, you know, tropical areas where there's more storms. And this is why, you know, people like Jack Cruz and these, you know, El Salvador, Central American folks, they say if you go on the beach after a thunderstorm, like, you will sleep like a rock. And that's because the immense amount of electrical activity and the grounding as a result of that, the negative surface charge in the earth is far stronger there. And of course, you're walking around barefoot everywhere because it's the tropics. So you get a much higher effect of grounding at the equator, and then you get stronger magnetism in the northern or southern extremes of the earth typically. But in general, you still want to be connected to, you know, ground in some capacity. And that's where it's a bit more challenging in wintertime for sure. So I have a few pairs of grounded shoes that I walk around in, and they're not perfect. They're not as good as being barefoot, but I think they're cool. I like to support these companies. They work to some degree. I've tested them with multimeters, and then I try to sleep grounded as well. And I'm fortunate to have hot springs in my town to where I can go and swim in a pool and, you know, be outside and technically be grounded in that regard. So I think it's still very important, but it's interesting to think of, again, how that regional difference in magnetism and electrical activity is present.
But when you sleep grounded, do you have a grounding mat, or how do you do it?
I have a grounding mat that is connected to a metal rod in my front yard. Yeah. And I run a wire to a grounding mat, and then I just have that kind of touching my feet or legs.
So we used that for a while too. And like, my bedroom in Norway is in the third floor, so it was a lot of hassle to get. I couldn't connect it, but I did plug it in and use another variation of the sheet. But it was kind of a hassle. But we have seen studies, of course, that it reduces the inflammation and it works really well. So what is your experience with the sheets? It might be the same. I don't know if it's the same studies.
Yeah, they used a few different modalities in the research. But what I was going to say is the research is like, there's a few good studies out there, but it's like nothing of what it needs to be. There's so much more we need to research in terms of grounding. And I think the mats and sheets and stuff are good. Again, if you have any connection, I think it's helpful. I'm definitely a bigger fan of plugging directly into the earth as opposed to your outlet, because I think you could run the risk of dirty electricity and EMF exposure there. Plus, I just want to be in an isolated circuit to the earth, and not, especially in the US, wiring practices are not the best. But in general, I think they're good. You know, I think they're cool to try, but I think there's a lot we still need to understand about grounding. But, you know, the best thing you can do is try to, you know, be barefoot or connected outside more, which can be hard. But I think there's something to say about that total lack of connection, and that's making us very, you know, electron deficient. So we need to get more energy from our food then as a result.
But I mean, on the snow.
On the snow, yeah. I mean, yeah, like not very long. So that's the hard part. But if you had some, you know, natural soled shoes or grounded shoes, it would be better than nothing, I would say.
So what we do, Aletta and me, we just do a very quick dip in the ocean.
Nice.
With our wool socks on, but it's really short, but at least you get the benefits from
And we also
water.
touch the soil on our plants inside. We really work on those in the wintertime.
There you go.
Yeah, so you can manage.
And also, like, we also do, like, walks together. We put on a bra and a shorts, and then we have shoes on, and we go out and just do cold walks for 20 minutes or so, because then you get more time and it's comfortable.
Yeah, that's very underrated. I think the cold shiver walks, whatever you want to call them, cold walks is great because it's not so extreme. Anyone could do it. Like, yeah, maybe it's a bit uncomfortable, but then, you know, you're also moving and getting some warmth. So I love doing that as well, like in a t-shirt.
My husband is so amazed that I do all the shoveling. He likes it.
It's invigorating too. And like when you get out of a cold plunge or, you know, you get back inside from being, you know, on a cold walk or shoveling, like you feel alive, you know, and you feel that energy, and it improves like your body's ability to, you know, provide for you in the wintertime. So I think it's extremely important to do that. And that's awesome that you guys are kind of leaning into that. And yeah, in a Norway, it's even more challenging because you have even less light and you need to be more deliberate about it. And that's the key to, you know, avoiding seasonal affective disorder or just, you know, winter, you know, the winter blues.
Yeah, we have to talk about that because we have lack of sunshine in this country in the wintertime. And what kind of steps can we take to optimize this? Because most people are actually at work during the daylight hours. They go to work when it's dark and they get home. So tips on what we can do during the day?
I think in general, what I recommend people is take as many light breaks as you possibly can. Again, you know, if you have lunchtime or you have like before you go to work, if you can, right when you wake up, I go outside. I wake up, I go for a 10-minute walk outside every day. That's like number one thing when I do. It's hard if you don't have the sun available, like you're going to work when it's still dark out. So what I would recommend is try and do that when the sun rises or get outside as many times as possible for when, you know, the sun is actually available. And, you know, spend your lunch breaks outside. Like, again, exercise. If you're going to work out in a gym, why don't you just do that exercise outside? Because that's when you're going to be warmed up. You know, if you're shoveling snow or like doing some calisthenics or you're skiing, like, again, it's a great way to get outside. Because what we're missing when we're inside all day is we're missing infrared light. So there's no ultraviolet. There's not a lot of ultraviolet present in the wintertime where we're at. So we're losing that regardless if you're outside or inside. But what you're missing is infrared light. And infrared is like 50% of sunlight. And that's being filtered through the windows. It's not present in modern LED or fluorescent lighting. But if you go outside, there is plenty of infrared light available. And as I mentioned earlier, it penetrates your clothing, like multiple, you can wear five layers and you're still getting like 50% infrared passing through. So if you're just outside walking, exercising, like as much as you can, that's the best recommendation that you could have. And then, you know, be respectful of your circadian health and try to unwind at the end of the day and embrace the sleep a little bit more in wintertime and the seasonal component. That's all going to, you know, the cold, all these things are going to compound to make you more resilient in the wintertime. But the most important thing, in the summer, you need to be maxing out. Like, you need to build those stores in the summer to carry yourself through the winter. Because if you're like half-assing summertime sun outdoor exposure, you're not gonna make it through winter. That's the whole point. That's why you guys have 20 hours of sun in the summer so that you can make it through 5 hours of sun in the winter. But if you're, you know, indoors all day in the summer as well, and again, you're in this modern world where we work in an office and everything, and it is very challenging. And I know it's probably almost impossible, but the more you can embrace it all year round, the better you're going to be able to carry yourself through these extremes.
Det startet med det klassiske lærerens eple, som en av elevene hadde lagt på pulten min en dag for å smiske litt, tror jeg. Og dagen etter var det lærerens banan, og så ble det broccoli, og vannmelon har jeg fått. Så ble det mer eksotiske ting, som lærerens mango og lærerens fysalis. Ja, så det har kanskje tatt litt av det her.
Ja, hos Extra får du alltid 8. Det betyr at du alltid får 8 frukt og grønnsaker på tilbud. Så blir det litt enklere å følge kostholdsrådene. Gjør det billig hos Extra.
Dette er lyden av starten på en brand. Lett å høre om man er hjemme, ikke sant? Men hvem hører røykvarsleren når ingen er hjemme? Med boligalarm fra Sektoralarm får du røykvarslere som er tilkoblet døgnbemannet alarmstasjon. Alarmoperatører vil reagere uansett om det er noen hjemme eller ikke. Og med Sektoralarm-appen har du full kontroll uansett hvor du er. Sektoralarm, alltid til stede.
One question about the vitamin D, because, yeah, of course, you need to build it up in the summertime, but many Norwegians are encouraged to take supplements during the winter time because they have so low levels.
Yes, this is a challenging topic to address because it's quite controversial. Yeah. I've written a Substack article on this. I would say, for starters, the vitamin D you get from a supplement is not anywhere equivalent to the vitamin D you're getting from sunlight. It is, you know, not sulfated. It is, you know, there's like 10 to 12 different forms of vitamin D you get when your body is synthesizing sunlight that's hitting your skin. And when you're just taking a supplement form, it's not sulfated. It's not as bioactive. And same thing when you're taking it from food, like, again, if you're eating locally, what is, you know, in Scandinavia and Nordic countries, you have a lot of seafood. You have like Arctic fatty fish that are actually pretty high in vitamin D as well. But they're not, that vitamin D is not the same as the vitamin D you get from the sun. So that's the first thing to understand about it. And then if you are to take a supplement, you would want to think about, it might make sense to take that like in the middle of the day with food while you're outside, perhaps also getting these input signals, or going for a walk after you eat it or take it. But I would say it might be better to, if you're really trying to offset it and your vitamin D levels are low, to get a, you know, an ultraviolet light lamp and, you know, synthesize vitamin D from a light perspective and do that in combination with red light therapy. So it's a more similar, you know, you're trying to emulate the sun as best as possible. And that's why, you know, there's mixed studies on like how effective vitamin D supplementation even is. And I think that's, you know, for good reason, and that people think this number goes higher on my blood work is just the answer. It sometimes is not the case at all. And you need to understand that it's a lot more complex than that. And it's really what we're missing when we're not getting it from the sun that matters a lot. So I would say gauge how you feel. And if you do feel a lot better when you take it, I'm not going to be the one to say never do that, but think about the context you're taking it in. Think about, it's not replacing sunlight, and maybe a light therapy device, if you feel like you need it, is a much better option.
Or even a combination. I see where you're getting, and I totally get it, but there's so many people who has low levels of vitamin D. So maybe a combination to amp up a little bit and then start to train yourself to get more sunlight parallel, and then ease off with a supplementation, because the best is always exactly. From food and
yeah.
From nature.
Yeah,
and, from
life, and it's going to work. Any supplement you take is going to work better if you're getting the right environmental signals along with that. So don't, I think the problem I have with it is people think it's a false sense of security if you just take the supplement and like skip the rest of the stuff that we talked about. It's a supplement. It should be supplemental to like everything else that we've mentioned here. And, you know, what's more important is how you feel. And the, you know, like, again, what we're doing, like with cold and embracing that seasonality, like what's the number one benefit of cold that like Huberman and these guys talk about all day long is dopamine, is how you feel. And that is like proven. And maybe that's a way for nature to allow us to survive in the winter times. When we get cold, we're inducing more of this dopaminergic response to make us, you know, available or able to survive and thrive in the winter time too. So it's easy to be like, you know, down on yourself and blame the cold and the gray for like being depressed, but it could also, it's also the same things that could make you feel great in the winter time.
It looks like you're in a very nice, cozy cottage in the mountains. It looks really fantastic.
Night,
but how do you light up your house
yeah,
at
thank
night?
You. I'm not in the mountains, I wish, but I'm just in town here in my house. But yeah, your light environment is huge. So that's the other thing. And what do we mention here? We mentioned that modern lighting and glass windows and being inside is really making us deficient in infrared light. So I am a maximalist, big proponent on incandescent lighting. I don't know what the state of incandescent lighting is in Norway, if it's, you know, completely illegal, partially not allowed. Like in the US, it's, you can only buy it on Amazon here. And in some states, you're not even allowed to ship it to, you know, your house, like California. So I'm sure it's similar over there. But the thing with incandescent lights, they have a spectrum of light very similar to candles, very similar to fire. They have a little bit of blue, a more green, more yellow, more orange, more red, and a ton of infrared. And that's important because we need infrared light, as I mentioned before, and we're very deficient in that. And when it has this increasing spectrum of light in terms of the longer wavelengths, it's warmer and it's, you know, less stimulating to our circadian rhythm, and the temperature of the light itself is lower. So at nighttime, I have some low power incandescents and candles, and that's what I use. And during the day, I have like these high power, like this is a high power 250 watt incandescent bulb. They're basically like chicken lamps. This is what people like put in their farms and barns to like keep their chickens warm in the winter when it's cold. And this is just a high power incandescent light. So I'm getting a ton of infrared exposure on my face while I'm inside, because although I have this lovely sun on my face right here, it's behind glass. So that glass is distorting the spectrum to some degree. But this would be a way too much power and brightness at nighttime. So then I turn that off and I switch to kind of the low power incandescents and candles. I love like beeswax candles, although they cost a fortune. You know, I'm a big fan of candles. So it's nice, yeah. You know, and they have no flicker as well. So I think a big
really
problem
nice.
with lighting is, you know, they're all the LEDs are flickering and none of them have infrared light. So analog incandescents and candles is the way I go. And I think it's funny because that's what everyone used to use like 80 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And now we're going back maybe.
Yeah. Well, this sounds really restorative and nice to listen to you and your beautiful evenings. And you suggest actually embracing the winter as a restorative period with more sleep and more recovery. How can we balance this mindset with the pressure of working life and everything we have to do?
It's hard, you know. I'm a busy guy as well, and I would say it's definitely a challenge. But even if you can embrace that to like a tiny bit of degree more in the wintertime, 5, 10, 20%, whatever you can do, I think it's helpful, because your body wants to be in that cyclical mode in these, you know, times of the year. And you're going to have like, you know, just that desire almost. And in the summertime, you're going to have way more energy if you're getting a lot of that, you know, increased light exposure from just that being available to you. So take advantage of that and, you know, think about like, you know, gearing your work schedule. We have the holidays, which are typically slower periods of time. Like, to be honest, December, January are typically like slower times the year for everyone. So just kind of embrace that, you know, spend more time with family and wind down at night, you know, read books instead of like doing emails, and, you know, just respect the light environment and try and be, you know, hygienic with your sleep and kind of tech exposure at nighttime to the best of your ability. But, you know, this is personal preference and of course doesn't scale to everyone. So it's just something I've noticed and I think is nice. And it's fascinating at the cellular level to understand that these, you know, cleanup processes are much more prevalent in the winter time if you embrace it, and kind of makes sense.
It does, really. And we talk more lately in Norway too about restoration, not only sleep, but having breaks and micro breaks during the day. So we should embrace that more. But what are some of your favorite winter sports or activities for people who want to combine outdoor exercise with fun and fitness?
Oh yeah, skiing, all forms of skiing, you know, downhill skiing I love, you know, touring and cross country, Nordic skiing is fantastic. And it's a great workout for sure as well. So if you're worried about like losing your fitness in wintertime, I think that's probably the best way to do it. But I, you know, hiking, snowshoeing, there's a lot. And again, just, you know, getting outside. And again, if you're going to like do push-ups or pull-ups or lift weights or anything, if you can move that outside somehow, then that's an even bigger win, because that's going to warm you up, and then you're getting the benefit of being outside as opposed to being in a gym, which is typically very, you know, artificially lit. So I would say anything. I don't know. What are some sports that you guys do in Norway that are common?
Everyone in Norway skis. That's our favorite. Cross country skiing is everywhere, and downhill everything skates, with skis, yeah, and skates, and yeah, we are actually quite a lot outside in the winter time. Biohacking girls,
changing the game. Vi fortsetter samarbeidet med Oslo Skin Lab og tar kollagenpulveret The Solution hver dag.
The Solution er hydrolysert kollagen, altså kollagen som er brutt ned til en helt bestemt peptidlengde. Hydrolysering ser ut til å være det som må til for å få effekt på hudens glatthet og spenst.
Kollagen er I vinden som aldri før. På helsekongresser over hele verden snakkes det mye om forskning på kollagen, og det er gjerne blitt en snakkes I Norge også nå.
Som biohackere optimaliserer vi kroppen innenfra og ut, og kollagen, det en nøkkelspiller. For når vi eldes, avtar kroppens naturlige kollagenproduksjon, noe som gir slappere hud og rynker.
Akkurat nå får du The Solution med 60% rabatt, og du får også Oslo Skin Labs en helt ny Hydro Bomb med på kjøpet. Det en skikkelig fuktbombe av en ansiktsmaske. Den vintertørre huden din kommer til å takke deg.
Vil du styrke hud, hår og negler, gjør The Solution til en del av din biohacking-rutine. Rabattkoden BIOHACKING60 pluss gave gir deg da 60% på første kjøp. Biohacking girls,
changing the game. Last year I have a fitness studio and I brought the mini trampoline classes outside. And people came in shorts and their sports tops, and we had like 20 minutes or maybe 10, depended on the wind and the snow. But it was really fun, and they loved it, and you know, the dopamine effect afterwards. And people passed by on the street. And I think it was kind of inspirational too, because it opens possibilities for people to see it's, you don't have to be inside. You can do the workout outside and do the CrossFit like you
do. I feel like you guys in Norway do a great job, to be honest. Like, I don't even need to convince people in Norway to go outside and like have fun in the winter as much as like in the US. Everyone is like, I'm the only one. I think it's crazy. So it's, you know, people ski here, but it's just different.
Really?
So I think what you guys are doing is great. And, you know, the other things that are helpful as well as like sauna and hot springs, mention that, because that's a way to, you know, get your body some infrared light and heat exposure as well in the winter. And I think that's stood the test of time. So it's like, if these things have popped up for a reason in these cold winter climates, and they feel great, there's some reason and logic and science behind them actually working as well. So I think combining exercise and sauna is also great. With the cold, of course.
Yes, sauna is a big, big practice here in Norway. It's really popular, of course, all over, the sauna and the cold plunging. And we have like these on the fjords, all these saunas floating around, and it's amazing. So many people use them, so it's really cool, actually.
You know what I got for Christmas from my eldest son? He gave me a little trip on a boat. A sauna boat.
Ooh.
We're going to do that in February.
Cool.
So you just go on the fjord on the sauna boat and you book it for a few hours. So that's really nice too. But I mean, I moved to Spain because I think it's kind of hard. I liked the combination of going back and forth, to be honest.
But Tristan, what does a
typical winter day look like for you? How do you do this?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's always evolving. It depends how much work I have, but I would say, you know, I'm very fortunate to, you know, live where I live as well, but I typically wake up, I don't know, whenever first light is, sometimes it's like 7, sometimes 7:30, and immediately go outside for like a 10-minute walk. And then depending how I'm feeling, I might, you know, have a little bit to eat, or I might do like a little bit of movement, you know, some mobility, some pull-ups, some like I have like a tire outside of my house that I hit with a sledgehammer. Just get the body going. I try my best to not turn on my phone for the first hour, like just not be on technology for the first hour. So sometimes I'll do more movement. Sometimes I'll read a book for like a chapter or two. And then when either of those are wrapped up, I will eat breakfast. And then I try to do that outside. Or if it's too cold and cloudy, I will eat it inside. And then I'll go for maybe another short walk after that. And then, you know, I'm typically working. I work outside as best as I can. Again, if I have like meetings or something that I could take while walking outside, or if it's super sunny, I'm very fortunate. Wyoming is very sunny. So sometimes it could be like -5°C, but if the sun is shining, I can work outside on my deck. It's actually not a problem. You know, maybe have gloves on, but it's not too cold. And, you know, when I'm in between, like in the winter time, I know that the middle of the day, it's extremely important to be outside, because that might be the only sliver of ultraviolet A light and kind of the highest energy wavelengths that I'm going to get. So I'm very lucky to have hot springs in my town. So I go to the hot springs, go for a swim for, you know, 30 minutes or something like that. And then when I'm there, I'll jump in the river, get back in the hot springs. It's great. And then I also have, you know, these little hills and mountains in my town. So I'll do a trail run or something, or try to do exercise outside as well. So in the winter time, I actually try and capitalize more during the middle of the day for being outside. And then I'll shift a lot of my work to trying to be in the late afternoon, evenings. And, you know, I'll purposely not work for an hour to two during the day so I can be outside. And then I'll work, you know, more after the sun goes down at like 5 o'clock, just because I think it's really important. And yeah, as we mentioned, after the sun goes down, I, you know, try to use incandescent. Well, I have only incandescent lights in my house pretty much, but like low power ones and candles at nighttime, really dark environment. And, you know, try to eat as or right after the sun goes down as my last meal. So yeah, that's kind of a typical day. And I'm definitely sleeping more in the winter time, naturally. I try not to set alarms unless I absolutely have to.
How is your appetite in winter? Is it lower?
No, I think it's different. I would say it might even, to some degree, it can be more, but that's a good question. It definitely shifts in terms of like, because I try to eat in a narrower time window, but I'm definitely craving like fattier foods and like warmer foods, of course. And less carbs. Like if I eat a bunch of carbs or something, like I'll be kind of like super fatigued. But that's just probably from what I'm used to. Whereas in the summer, if it's like 35-40°C, in the middle of the day, I have like very little appetite for cooked food. So that's when I eat like a little bit of tartare for lunch or something like that. So it definitely shifts depending on the day, but in general, yeah, appetite is pretty strong. And you could argue that you even need to get like more calories from food in the wintertime because you just have like less energy. But then again, it depends on how much energy you're expending, because you should be less active in the winter. And if you're embracing cold, maybe it kind of cancels each other out. But it's interesting to think about.
Very. Well, I feel the same, actually. I'm kind of the same. So, but I think it's the individual, all that. Tristan, should we talk a little bit about the daylight computer, your computer system? Just a little bit, like a little teaser for our audience, but we can come back to that more later, because we were so lucky to test out the computers in London. So would you just give us a short background of that?
Yeah, absolutely. The Daylight Computer is, you know, here's one of mine here. But it's a company, it's a product, it's my, you know, big mission that I'm working on full time. And we're at a high level trying to build healthier technology. So we think that one of the biggest detriments in our environment, in our day-to-day, for our health, for our well-being, for productivity at a societal level is our devices, because they are designed to be addictive, to be very stimulating, to keep you on screen longer. And from their design, they are keeping us in this artificial world, this artificial environment that we're very bound to. And it's removing us from nature. It's removing us from the connected world we're supposed to be a part of. And as a result of that, you know, our physical, our mental health is suffering. And really, although we have these tools, they're actually making us almost less productive in a sense, because they're so distracting and overstimulating. So I think pretty much everyone would be on board with the fact that their phones, their devices are not great for them, or they're, you know, they could be a lot better. And a lot of people are addicted to them. Social media, the software, everything, the algorithms are very cleverly designed to keep us on screen longer. So our whole mission is, what if we change that? What if we had a value set where the technology is centered around well-being and productivity and focus, and also a mission of a company that wants to get people back into what we call the real world, which is the natural world, which is outside. And, you know, we have this list of reasons why technology and devices are detrimental to our health. And it starts with the main interface, which is the screen, which is the display. So at Daylight, we invented a new display technology that was kind of, you know, the motivation, the, you know, inspiration behind it stemmed from like the Amazon Kindle. And, you know, in Norway, you're probably, you know, very familiar with the Remarkable tablet. Is, you know, a popular Norwegian company, actually. And that screen is called electronic ink that the Kindle, Remarkable, all these e-readers use. And it's fantastic because it feels like digital paper. It's easy on the eyes. You can use it outside. The battery life is great. But the problem is that refresh of the screen is too slow to be used for like full internet, full computer, tablet functionality. So that's why it's never evolved from being more than good for reading books and taking notes. So we thought, you know, what if we could create something similar to where it's fast enough, it still feels like a digital piece of paper, you can use it outside, has great battery life, and, you know, put even a few more health spins in it. And that's what we came up with. So our screen display technology is reflective at its core. So it does feel like, you know, a digital magic piece of paper, but then you can use it outside without having any light, you know, being emitted from it, and get the benefit of being outside, having really long battery life. And then unlike the Kindle or Remarkable, we custom made a backlight that is 100% blue light free, flicker free. It's amber in tone. So you don't have to wear blue light blockers when you're staring at our screen. The flicker we took out of the LEDs, and it just makes that barrier to entry much lower than having, you know, iris or efflux or blue light, like red blockers on that you really can't see super well when you wear these things. And then the biggest thing versus, you know, the e-ink, Kindle, Remarkables is it's fast enough to refresh and be used for any app. So you can do Gmail on it. You can do Google Docs. You can do messaging, WhatsApp, like social media on there. And it's still this monochrome digital paper type feel, but you can do a whole lot more on the device itself. So yeah, we launched the tablet in May of this year and sold out, and it's been great. And I know you guys are getting yours like very, very soon. So I'm excited for that. And I use mine like every day, and it's cool that we have this opportunity to really reinvent technology from the ground up with health in mind. And there's a lot more we want to do, but we're really excited about, you know, what we have here as a first product. And I love it. And it's cool because it seems like the timing could not be better for people being aware of the detriments of modern technology and hungry and ready for something else, something better. And you can talk about like something we're really passionate about, how this could affect the next generation, the children, because they're growing up on these devices and these artificial realities, and it's really shaping the way the next generation thinks and feels and acts. And the repercussions are, you know, really scary of what we're seeing so far from like a mental health perspective. And that's something we're really trying to upend and change the course of in terms of the trajectory. So it's super exciting. And that's why we're super thankful to connect with folks like yourself and have an opportunity to, you know, discuss it and talk about our, you know, what we're trying to build here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're mentioning the next generation too, because my youngest son, he's 13, and his New Year's resolution is to not go and watch the shorts.
Oh yeah, me too.
You too. So, but I think still, if you can relax your eyes on something that doesn't cause you so much pain, because I too think these blue light blockers sometimes take away the ability to read well and to see all the things. So I think a new screen for us, we are waiting with excitement for us, for hours to come. So that's good. But how has the sales been so far?
Yeah, they've been great. You know, it's very challenging, just to preface, like a hardware company, like we're competing with Apple and Amazon and Google. So we're super appreciative of everyone who's supported us so far, including, you know, you guys. And it's really hard, like getting, you know, the inventory right, and it takes a long time to ship. So it's hard, because when you're a small guy, like in this massive like industry, like nobody cares about you. You get the worst terms for everything. But I think the success we've had with our sales and with our support and selling out mostly like 99% organic on social media, mostly through Twitter, has just been a testament that, yeah, people are ready for something different. They're excited and they're, you know, ready to support technology that theoretically does less so that you as a person can do more. And that's kind of the whole primitive. And like we're going like not backwards, but we're thinking about what really makes sense so that we can have some synergism between, you know, our biology, nature, and the technology that we use, instead of just completely disrupting it. Biohacking girls,
changing the game. Vi bryter bare inn her for å fortelle om Norges kuleste helsesamling, nemlig Biohacking Weekend, og det skjer 5. og 6. april I 2025, det fjerde året. Vi samler et stort og viktig panel for å snakke om helse, og vi har med så mange kule forelesere.
Vi har med oss lege Karim Sayed, som skal snakke om regenerativ estetikk.
Forsker Thomas Schumach Medina, han studerer NAD+, og hvilke helseeffekter det har.
Så har vi med oss Maria Emmerich hele veien fra Hawaii, og hun skal snakke om proteiner og det å gå ned I vekt.
Vi skal også innom de forbudte bioheksene, nemlig Methylene Blue, cannabis og mikrodosering blant annet, med Eva B. Andersson og Melissa Telvall.
Så har vi med oss Dr. Bill Schindler, som skal snakke om metabolsk helse og ultraprosessert mat.
Christina Schindler, hun skal snakke om ultraprosessert mat og hvordan dette påvirker familien I det store bildet.
Og så skal vi snakke om traumer. Vi har med oss Therese Tonning og Mai Camilla Munkejord på dette tema.
Kate Shanahan lege og forsker og verdens stemme innenfor vegetabilske oljer, så gleder jeg til å høre henne.
Vi har med oss Jessica Alana, og hun skal snakke om peptid og bioregulerende terapi.
Og ikke minst så har vi fått med oss Susanne Holzweiler, som en biohacking sister, og hun skal være konferensier, og I tillegg til det så har vi mange fantastiske utstillere som på plass, og der skjer mye viktige og fine aktiviteter.
Så følg med og meld dere på om dere ikke har gjort det allerede.
Link finner du under episoden her.
Yeah, we definitely have to have you back, Tristan, when we have gotten ours and have tried it for a while, so we can really talk about this, because it's revolutionary. I'm so glad you guys are doing this. Keep it up.
Just to sum up, maybe we should sum up a little bit. If you could just highlight the things we've been talking about, some 5-10 good hacks for the winter now, so we can just,
thrive.
Be our best.
I think at a high level, again, we can get into the science and the mitochondrial uncoupling and all this stuff, but it's like the more connected you can be to your local environment, the better you're going to feel. And you can even add like community and local relationships into that discussion as well. I think the more, you know, connection you have at a local level, whether that's food, whether that's temperature, whether that's, you know, the light cycles and the sleep cycles, that's what it's all about, because we never had these modern luxuries and comforts ever before in human history. Like some examples, very small, for the super, super elite, where they could get things shipped across the world. And even then, and that's what our biology has been programmed to do. It's been programmed to take the input signals from your local environment into your system and optimize all of your, you know, cellular reactions and processes, hormonal output, energy to thrive, you know, and survive. It really was to survive in that, but you can also thrive in any environment. And I think embracing, you know, where you're from and that environment that you're in. And as, you know, people of European descent, we have the genetics to be very flexible to our environment. And I think there's something cool about that. And it's kind of a flex of your health that you can, you know, thrive in these kind of, you know, extreme environments and enjoy them, because they're, you know, they're beautiful. Like the winter time for me, you know, the blue and the white and the green and like the mountains and the forests, it's stunning. So I love the winter time. And it's also, you know, this ability to really flex your biology and showcase that I can be adaptive. And all I need to do is, you know, go down that list of what we talked about, like try and eat hyper local as best as you can, like avoid the, you know, the fruits and the things that are very seasonal, mostly in the summertime. Embrace the temperature change, getting cold, still embracing outdoors, you know, all year round, but having to be much more deliberate about it in winter. And yeah, have fun about it, like go skiing and, you know, do a sauna on a fjord. That sounds incredible. I want to come do that, you know, and, you know, do it with friends and community. That it's even more enjoyable and you'll get even more fulfillment out of that as well. And yeah, the food, the one thing I mentioned is that fat has this higher ability to uncouple your mitochondria. DHA and these omega-3s are so important for, you know, cognitive ability. And I think there's studies showing that they're also very helpful in, you know, increasing levels of dopamine, which is going to be reduced from reduced light exposure in the winter. And there's, you know, some crazy ability of DHA specifically to, you know, produce DC electricity in the body in this, you know, quantum semiconduction fashion. But that's a rabbit hole people can go down if they want, I would say. And just embracing the winter time at all level, the restoration, the increased sleep cycles. And maybe in Norway, it's unreasonable to sleep for, you know, 12 hours a night when it's dark. But if you can, you know, think about what's most optimal for your kind of schedule and sleeping a little bit more, being a little bit more restful and restorative in those nighttime hours, so that you do get those increased levels of melatonin that are going to regulate autophagy and apoptosis and help your cells repair and restore. And then in the summertime, you're ready to attack, you know, 18 hours of sun exposure and get all of that. And if you do have the ability to, you know, supplement or go to Spain or, you know, get some sun for a short period of time, yeah, embrace that. That's what life's about, and it's fun and it's enjoyable to travel and do that. And then, you know, fill that battery, but be thinking about that. Especially I would say, you know, we're in the midst of winter now. What people really want to do, I think, is when you come out of winter. So we passed the winter solstice already. That's the worst is behind us in terms of light. But as we get into spring, where it's still cold, but you're getting more and more sun, that is when you really want to be like building your solar callus, getting outside as much as possible and fueling, you know, that energy battery to be filled so that you can stay outside a lot longer in the summertime. And, you know, there's all these, you know, things that happen in nature that, you know, the snow, for example, like snow will reflect UV light back at you. So you can actually get a good amount of UV exposure when it returns because you're getting more reflection from the snow. You have to be careful in certain scenarios and And that might be the one time I would say like wearing sunglasses or something can be helpful, but you can augment your exposure by, you know, just being outside and in a winter climate there as well. So yeah. And lighting, thinking about your light environment, thinking about how to emulate the sun. And I don't know if you can get incandescents in Norway or there's some back way to do that, but someone knows, share it with the rest of the audience. Because I find that they make a huge difference in how you feel, especially when you're spending increased amount of time indoors. Otherwise, you know, red light therapy panels and red light therapy devices you can have on in the background or do periodically throughout the day can also be very helpful. And that's infrared light exposure, but it's also, you know, we talked about uncoupling your mitochondria. When you get cold, your body is naturally producing infrared light as well. So that's something that people don't understand or research very heavily, or really we're just scratching the surface, is that we have the ability to produce light within our own body and then utilize that light as energy when it's not as available from the sun. But the only way you're going to do that is if you get cold and you kind of embrace wintertime to a higher degree. So there's a lot you can do. You don't need to be like, you know, a Viking warrior who lives outside or something crazy. You don't need to be cold plunging like for an obscene amount of time. But even if you did like, you know, 30% more, 40% more in terms of embracing the locality, I think you're going to feel a lot better. And then you're going to kind of be surprised at how much fun winter can be and enjoy it and, you know, appreciate the seasonality aspect of life and where we live, because not everywhere has that. And I think it's kind of fun. And it's like a new challenge is on the horizon every 2 to 3 months.
Perfect.
Oh, thank you. I have learned so much. And I think I'm not going to buy heaters from my, I'm here like 16 degrees, but I have wool on. There's 18 degrees outside. So I should just, I don't know. I'm going to skip it. I'm going to skip the heaters.
We are good as well, because I thought we were really cold. We have like 15 degrees, but you are at 10. So I have some work to do here.
It's we tough. Can't
get the house warmer.
I will say, don't overdo the cold. The cold, you can definitely overdo it. So be careful. Yeah. Again, I'm not saying like be uncomfortable all the time, but like, yeah, if you can like slowly bring it down and still be comfortable, or, you know, maybe it's a little colder and you have a fire or something, or you have some, you know, some natural perfect. Source or you get outside and run around a bit.
Tristan, this has been wonderful. How can people find you? We found you through your podcast, Decentralized Radio, but it's been nothing there lately.
Yeah. My podcast is kind of on pause since I'm full time with Daylight, and you know, that's the main mission now. Maybe I'll bring it back. I'm trying to write some Substack articles. I just wrote a Substack article on the winter, so you could check that out. I think it's my name or Decentralized Health. So you can look up Tristan Scott or Decentralized Health on Substack. And then social media, on Instagram, I'm at Tristan_Health. On Twitter, at @Bitcoin_beef. And Daylight Computer is daylightcomputer.com. I know we'll maybe talk more about that in the future, and at Daylight Co. on social media. So reach out, and appreciate, you know, you guys having me on this seasonality winter. Again, there's so many people. I think the health space is kind of sometimes toxic in the fact that everyone's at the beach all the time. Like it's easy to be healthy at the beach. Like you're outside, you're barefoot, you're grounded, it's sun, you know, but not everyone can move to the beach. Not everyone should. And like places like Norway, they're incredible. They're beautiful. And I love the fact that you guys like, you know, embrace that and appreciate that. So I think we need more, you know, folks in the health space talking about these things. And that's where I get really excited. Yeah. So this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
We had so much fun. Yeah. Yes. Thank you very much, Tristan. We hope to see you soon again, and have a great winter.
You as well. Thank you so much.
And good luck with everything with the Daylight Computer. We are really looking forward to it.
Take care. Bye-bye. Biohacking girls,
changing the game. Det var spennende. Dette var en fyr som var god til å prate, og som virkelig har embraced vinteren. Jeg ble inspirert, særlig av den der, han satt der og så skikkelig varm ut, og så forteller han at det 10 grader inne. Det ikke veldig varmt, for oss som ikke så vant til det, men allikevel så synes jeg han var så inspirerende og så positiv til dette her med liksom, i stedet for å bare flytte til en strand, at vi takler det egentlig veldig bra og kan ha det og thrive faktisk om vinteren. Vi trenger ikke å bare lide oss gjennom mørket, men det krever noen livsstilsjusteringer fra vår side.
Og han begynte jo med å dele helseutfordringene han hadde hatt i forhold til det store skiftet ved å gå fra leger til å heller benytte natur, jording, lyset, solens helende kraft, mat, måten å spise i sesong, og være mye utendørs, og bruke det som en terapeutisk vei til å få det bedre. Han hadde jo fått veldig mye bedre. Og selv om man ikke kunne måle dette på prøver og sånn, for det litt vanskelig å se hvordan senskader fra hjernerystelser viser målinger på, så følte han seg bra. Han følte seg frisk, hadde fått masse energi og gå fra å måtte sove 12 timer på natten til å plutselig kunne klare seg med 7 timer, fordi at han levde mer syklisk da. Så det synes jeg var veldig lærerikt, og jeg tror det jo undervurdert, vi snakker om det mye, hvor mye naturen og jording og beskytte oss mot EMF og heller få den der kraften, hvor mye det har å si for helsen vår.
Veldig mye. Og han snakket, eller vi snakket, om dette med mat, og hvordan man da justerer på dieten sin i forhold til årstider. Og det kommer jo også av at kroppen vår hele tiden trenger å vite hvor i syklusen hele årstiden den er. Sånn at når vi da bor i Norge, så skal vi kanskje ikke spise bananer og tropisk frukt midt på vinteren, og heller gå litt mer inn i en sånn ketogen stil med høyere fett, fordi det hjelper mitokondriene våre å skape energi som vi trenger om vinteren for å holde oss varme. Så det var mye snakk om dette med mat, hvordan han da hyperlokalt snakket han om. Det betyr at du skal spise det som tilgjengelig rundt deg om vinteren.
Ja, og det var jo litt vanskelig da han snakket om den mitokondrielle frikoblingen, uncoupling, som han sier. Da ble det litt teknisk, og vi måtte også skjerpe ørene litt, for dette en litt sånn komplisert biologisk prosess der energi som vi ville normalt brukt til å lage cellevaluta, altså ATP, i mitokondriene, de frigjøres i stedet for varme, og da det denne koblingen skjer når man eksponerer seg for kulde.
Veldig bra forklart, Monica.
Ja, ja, jeg kan ikke forklare det bedre enn det, men det jo dette som vi kan si kalles for termogenese, som en helt vanlig kroppslig naturlig mekanisme som har hatt siden tidens morgen, og at det viktig for det brune fettvevet, som også hjelper til med å brenne mer fett. Så alt dette henger sammen med mitohelsen, altså den kuldeeksponeringen som man snakket om.
Det jeg synes var kult var at han forklarte at det, hvorfor det brunt, fordi det så ekstremt mye mitokondrier i det fettet. Det visste ikke jeg.
Ja, for ellers jo mitokondrien alle bilder du ser på, det jo rødt, ikke sant? Så, men det jo mange tiltak som man snakket om som kan fremme denne koblingen, og det var kulde, og så var det den trening utendørs, gjerne i lys, og så snakket du litt om maten som han pratet om, som var sesongrelatert og mye fett og karnivore. Ja. Og det viktig å tenke på for dere som enten spiser mye eller lite karbohydrater, at kosthold også kan gjøre litt av denne prosessen, eller å faste.
Ja, for vi snakket jo om det å spise når det sol, og det blir jo da selvfølgelig et kortere spisevind om vinteren. Og så var vi litt inne på dette med hva man gjør når det da mørkt hele døgnet, og da må man jo bruke maten som en sånn tidsgiver, så da må du spise litt sånn til samme tid for å late som det dag. For du kan jo ikke spise hele vinteren.
Nei, for å hjelpe kroppen å forstå hvor han i tid på døgnet, sånn at døgnrytmen blir mer balansert. Og en annen ting, vi skriver jo om dette i boken, og vi har snakket med flere leger om det, både Torkel Færø og Ragnhild Skare i jul, dette med vitamin D. Vi har også lest mange studier som Westner Price holder på med, og vi jo da der selv som biohackere at vitamin D-tilskudd noe vi observerer studier nå fremover på hvordan det virker og hvilke helseeffekter det faktisk gir. Men jeg synes vi landet på noen gode perspektiver sammen med Tristan da. For utgangspunktet så var han jo litt skeptisk, ikke sant?
Ja, han var vel mer for, fordi ikke sant, den D-vitamin vi tar i en pille, det en komponent, mens den D-vitamin vi får via solen jo 25 forskjellige komponenter, så det noe helt annet. Så det jeg synes var en god strategi fra han jo det at de fleste trenger D-vitamin fordi vi ikke embracer sommeren. Sånn som vi bør gjøre. Vi like mye innom sommeren, veldig mange, og da får vi jo ikke fylt opp lagrene fra sol. Og dermed så likte jeg godt det der å bruke de der lampene som, det sånne D-vitaminlamper som du kan bruke for å heller kanskje stimulere det og gjøre det i kombinasjon med et tilskudd, og også gjøre det ute. Det var jo vanvittig bra hacks, alt dette her.
Ja, og så også hvis du har veldig lave nivå som mange har i Norge, så kan du kanskje bare fortsette litt grann og følge legens råd. Det må du alltid gjøre, ikke høre på oss nødvendigvis sånn sett, men det kan hende du kan feide inn og feide ut da. At du øver deg opp og bygger mer lagre, at du blir mer bevisst på når våren kommer og sommeren kommer, at du da går virkelig inn for å øke de nivåene så mye du bare kan. Og så må du bare bruke de tilskuddene du trenger selvfølgelig for å ikke bli syk og for å holde, men det litt mange ulike meninger rundt tilskudd, og jeg var jo litt overrasket selv at jeg hadde lavere nivå enn det jeg egentlig trodde, for jeg har vært såpass mye i sollys nede i Spania, så jeg tok et par doser med sånn 25 000 international units, og så jeg har bare tatt det ikke målt en gang etterpå, men det jo noe at jeg tror alle må bare høre på sin egen lege og tenke hva som fornuftig for hver og en.
Helt, helt riktig. Så der fortsetter vi å forske, og vi fortsetter å spørre omtrent alle vi snakker med, så det veldig, vi lærer noe hver gang vi får et nytt perspektiv på dette vi også. Så det bra.
Og så snakket vi litt om hvile, det å bruke denne sesongen til en sånn restaurativ tid, siden vi da tilfeldigvis litt mindre energiske og kanskje går litt mer i dvale på vinteren, så kan vi prøve å balansere hodene våre og tenke at det greit, at det ikke så aktivt, at det ikke så mye sosialt som skjer.
Helt klart. Nei, så det, og så avsluttet vi jo selvfølgelig podden med å snakke om Daylight Computer, hans store baby, som vi snart får i hendene våre vi også. Så vi gikk ikke sånn veldig inn på det, han fortalte litt om teknologien og sånn, men vi vil jo gjerne spare det til en egen episode.
Men det vi kan si det at vi har testet maskinene, og de helt, helt fantastiske å se på. Og de har noen funksjonaliteter som jeg aldri har sett før, i forhold til å, du føler at du tar både notatblokken din og konvertere inn i en maskin, så du kan bruke den fysisk med fingrene dine, og lese veldig behagelig fra øynene. Så dette noe vi skal dele mer om etter hvert.
Ja, da håper vi dere har en strålende uke, alle sammen. Og har det helt nydelig nå, disse vinterdagene, og virkelig embracer kullen.
Og del gjerne med oss hvis dere har noen gode vintertips, noe som både hekker humøret og gir sosiale sammenkomster mer glød og glede. Så del gjerne med oss, og tusen takk for at dere har lyttet. Ha en fortsatt fin uke, ja. Biohacking girls, taking the lead, the future is bright, and the plant in the seed. Vi minner om at dere må snakke med egen lege eller kostholdsveileder om dietter og andre spørsmål relatert til medisiner og supplementer. Informasjon med dele kan ikke bli brukt til å diagnostisere, behandle, forebygge eller kurere noen sykdommer eller tilstander.
Dette lyden av en person som ikke trenger å bruke hele morgenen på å lete etter husnøklene. Nemlig lyden av Yale Doorman som låser opp døren og deaktiverer alarmen samtidig. Med boligalarm fra Sektoralarm og Yale Doorman har du nøkkelfri tilgang og økt sikkerhet til boligen din. Via appen kan du opprette koder, slippe inn svigermor og gi håndverkeren midlertidig tilgang. Les mer om et trygt smarthjem på sektoralarm.no. Sektoralarm. Alltid til stede.